we Lutherans were never aided by following along with some other tradition's theological priorities and catchphrases.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, Coordinator for Stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on a Lutheran approach to stewardship.
Other folks are not approaching it from our good, solid Lutheran understanding of law and gospel and vocation. There's a place to talk about this in Christianity, and we have a way of talking about stewardship as Lutherans without ever using the word stewardship, if you like. I'm going to talk to you today about your vocation in your home, in your church, in your society, and how each one of these makes a claim on you, on your presence, on your support, on your prayers. That's how we should talk about this as Lutherans.
You'll find several stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship, lcms.org/stewardship.
Lord, deliver us from governing by crisis.
One night, I just woke up and it went, killing Jesus. And I believe, because I'm a Catholic, that comes from the Holy Spirit.
Going up to the Spirit in the sky. That's where I'm gonna go when I die.
The American church just doesn't get what's happening to Christians in the rest of the world.
I think that in worship, people learn to speak Christian. And I'm concerned that we are losing the ability to speak Christian in our culture because too much of the worship either imitates the culture or sounds like the culture.
Hi, this is Eric, and I'm a steel worker from Pittsburgh, PA. With some noise reduction headphones and the new iPhone app, I listen to Issues Etc. all day long.
Yes, it is part of our history. There's no doubt about that. But you might have noticed the headline that was running over the weekend that the Orthodox Christians are marking the 1700th anniversary of an Edict of Tolerance. That's what it's called in the headline. 1700 years ago. And of course, there was a headline earlier this year in the spring when the Vatican celebrated the same Edict of Tolerance. But what could this Edict of Milan, as it is usually called, what could it possibly mean for us today in the 21st century, where religious tolerance is taken for granted by many Christians? It is expected, and in fact, Christians are beginning to feel a little bit of the heat when they don't feel as tolerated as they have been in the past. There was a time, of course, in Christian history where Christians didn't expect toleration, much less to be promoted or helped along by civic government. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Monday afternoon. It's the 7th of October. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. James Buscher joins us to talk about the 1700th anniversary of the Edict of Milan issued by Emperor Constantine, what it meant then, what it means today. Dr. Gerhard Bode will join us after that. We'll stay in history mode. 18th century Lutheran pastor Henry Melchior Muhlenberg, you may not have heard of him, but he occupies a pretty significant place in American history and in American Lutheran history. We'll find out all about him in about a half hour. In hour two of Issues Etc., the headline from the AP reads, Arab World Searches for Democratic Future. All over the Arab world, democracy isn't turning out the way that we'd like to see it turn out. It's getting pretty bad. Dr. Alvin Schmidt will join us to talk about Islam and democracy. And then Pastor Tom Baker joins us for our weekly Sunday school lesson. We'll be teaching the Sunday school lesson from 2 Kings chapter 2, Elijah is taken into heaven. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at IssuesETC. Dr. James Buscher is Assistant Professor of Historical Theology and Director of Deaconess Studies at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Buscher, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Don.
Why would Christians, it was celebrated by the Western Church and by the Vatican, and now the Eastern Church a little bit later here, in the 21st century, be celebrating an edict from an emperor 1,700 years ago?
Yeah, the Edict of Milan, or at least so-called Edict of Milan, was just a really watershed moment and a very significant shift, and kind of especially in regard to the relationship between Christianity and the state. I mean, if you can put it that way, that really for the first 300 years, Christianity had been considered an illicit religion by the Roman Empire. It was not tolerated. I mean, Judaism was, and sometimes Christianity was tolerated in relationship to Judaism. But as Christianity had grown in the second century and third, there had been many periods of persecution by the Roman Empire, really throughout the third century. And so the Edict of Milan is when Constantine, who has risen to power, wins the battle at the Milvian Bridge, and also the Emperor of the East, Licinius, they gathered together at Milan and talked about matters of state and agreed at that point to issue a letter that would tolerate not only Christianity, but tolerate every religion. In a sense, it left it up to the people the freedom to worship the God of their choice. And so you really have the beginnings of this very significant moment where religious freedom is now established and becomes kind of the policy of the empire. And maybe in our own day, we can look back upon that and see the same issue remains with us today, kind of the relationship between the church and the state and the basic freedom to worship the God according to our desire.
You said the so-called Edict of Milan. There is some debate as to whether or not this is an official Roman imperial edict, isn't there?
Yeah, that's right. And I don't know exactly all the history behind that. I mean, basically what we have, I think, is a letter that Licinius wrote that was sent out to all his governors in, I think it was the summer of 313, which really gave, order that Christians be given the same rights that evidently they already had under Constantine in the West. So it's more of a letter, but I suppose, you know, if you understand edict as giving it a little more weight according to its now historical significance, it's certainly worthy of the title because it certainly has had a profound effect on the history of the church and the whole history of Western civilization.
So really, it was already Constantine's, as emperor in the West, his policy to tolerate Christianity, but this, in effect, kind of makes it official.
Yeah, I think, it's certainly it seems Constantine, gave certainly special favors to Christianity. Didn't make Christianity the religion of the empire by any means, but he certainly did favor it and gave it full freedom. And also it meant that Christians would receive the return of their property that had been confiscated in persecutions. For instance, a lot of this comes out of the Diocletian persecution that Diocletian, time as emperor ended in 305. So Constantine had restored property to Christians and that had been confiscated during that persecution. So it seems we don't know exactly what happened at the Milvian Bridge according to the idea of the conversion of Constantine, but he does seem to have favored it and given it a certain significance in the empire. And Licinius in the East now agrees to that same kind of policy, to not only give Christians the right to now worship and to assemble as a church and to organize, but even returning property that had been confiscated and things like that.
Should it be noted, and am I wrong here, that Licinius himself was a pagan? He was not a Christian.
Right, yeah, he's a pagan, and so This is, I think, a political calculation, certainly on his part, and no doubt a good deal of the influence of Constantine on him, that in order to kind of gain political favor with Constantine, this is something Licinius felt he needed to do, and that was not unusual. In fact, you have different, maybe some other cases where edicts of toleration had been issued at different points, but they never really lasted very long. They were just kind of political calculations of whether I need to tolerate Christianity or whether I should persecute it according to my own political kind of calculation. But this Edict of Milan is one that actually seems to have lasted and becomes basically kind of more the permanent policy of the empire.
Why is that? Why is this one among the other tolerations that Christianity may have enjoyed temporarily under Roman government. Why does this one stick?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a good question. I'm not sure if I can answer that fully, except that, you know, Christianity and Christian bishops, like maybe it is a little bit of a testament to, you know, what is happening in the church, that Christian bishops are being seen as having greater and greater influence over the public and certainly in their communities. I mean, Christianity is now growing to be a more and more significant minority in the empire. And so I think it's at a point where these bishops, these local communities, and then how bishops are interacting with each other throughout the empire, the organization of the Christian church as a more Catholic now empire-wide institution. I think maybe it's a testament to the power that they wielded in their communities, and I think emperors couldn't ignore that anymore. They're going to be forced to recognize that power and seek to make use of it and to bring it into their own or under their own umbrella of their own power. So I would say that's probably one of the big aspects of it, that this is going to hold sway just because of the significance of the church's organization and its power, its wielding.
So, in other words, the church as a, for lack of a better word, political force in the Roman Empire, is fairly well established, and this simply firms up that establishment.
Yeah, I think it is becoming, you know, more and more significant. You know, I mean, it just you know, socially speaking, in these communities, you know, bishops have hospitals. You know, there's the development now of hospices, of taking care of the poor, taking care of orphans, and these kinds of things that more and more churches are doing, which did give them a significant kind of social power within communities. That I do think that governors, as they look at what do we need to do to maintain you know, good order in our cities, are seeing that they need to work with the Christians and with the bishops and their churches, just because in terms of the social community structure, Christianity is holding a significant place.
Dr. James Buescher is our guest. We're talking about the 1700th anniversary of the Edict of Milan issued by Emperor Constantine on this Monday afternoon, October the 7th. He's assistant professor of historical theology and director of deaconess studies at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. When we come back, what was the Roman rationale for not tolerating Christianity in the first place? Stay tuned.
Your travels bring you to Northwest Indiana. The Saints of Heritage Lutheran Church in Valparaiso invite you to join us for a Christ-centered, cross-focused divine service at 9 a.m. on Sunday morning. For more information about visiting Heritage, please contact Pastor Joseph Ostafinski by calling 219-464-2810 or sending an email to heritagelc@frontier.com. You can also visit us on the web at www.heritage.com. lcms.org.
What happens when you take solid doctrine and solid curriculum and combine them with ancient scholars and modern technology? You get Wittenberg Academy, the very first completely online classical Lutheran high school. We are unabashedly Lutheran and offer families a rigorous standard of academic excellence. Students can pick and choose classes, or they can utilize our entire curriculum for their high school education. Visit our website, WittenbergAcademy.org, to find out more.
Historic, authentic Christian radio. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
I like to think of the deaconess vocation as driven by two things: the love of Christ and the needs of our neighbor.
Dr. James Buescher, Director of Deaconess Studies at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the vocation of deaconess.
First, the deaconess is moved by the love of Christ, who came not to be served, but to serve. Yet I think we can also see the profound needs around us: broken families, loneliness, despair. Deaconesses help the church to become a true family that manifests the love of Christ in our love for one another, and especially for those in need.
If you've ever considered the vocation of deaconess, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, invites you to prayerfully consider October 10th through the 12th. For more information, call 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the 1700th anniversary of the Edict of Milan issued by Emperor Constantine on this Monday afternoon, October the 7th. I'm fascinated when I hear people's stories about how they came to Reformation theology, how they came to confessional Lutheranism. That's why we always feature in the Issues Etc. journal every edition a section called the Wittenberg Trail, and it's a place where guests or pastors or even listeners sometimes tell their story about their travels from wherever they were theologically. Sometimes they were atheists, sometimes they were Baptists, sometimes they were all over the spectrum. To Reformation theology, the latest Issues Etc. journal has a great one from David Ramirez. Not from Lutheranism to Lutheranism, but from liberal Lutheranism to confessional Lutheranism. It's a fascinating story that he tells in the Wittenberg Trail feature of the latest Issues Etc. journal. And I have an article there, a follow-up on my article from 10 years ago, 9 Questions for Old Earth Creationists. More questions for old earth creationists in the latest Issues Etc. journal. Subscribe for free at our website, issuesetc.org. Look for the big red button, enter your email address, and you're subscribed. Dr. James Buscher is our guest. We're talking about the Edict of Milan. Dr. Buscher, we talked before about the rationale for tolerating Christianity, and this is a little strange for us in living in a land where there is religious liberty. But what was the ancient Roman rationale for not tolerating Christianity insofar as it didn't, in the first place?
Yeah, right. The first 3 centuries, I think, Christianity's, very much a minority. And I think the way Roman emperors and governors and magistrates are looking at the church is that they are a fragmenting force. That is to say that these churches are causing, undermining the unity of cities because they don't participate in the festivals of the other gods. They don't participate kind of in the different athletic events, the theaters, the different social institutions, the games and things like that, and the festivals that occupied the center of Roman cities and the civic cults that occupied the center of those cities. And so I think the church was seen as this that which is undermining the unity of the city. So what they really disliked was Christian assemblies, that Christians were assembling apart from the rest of the Roman city and fracturing the city and kind of undermining that unity of the city. So they were seen as a definite threat, I think, to the unity of the empire. So generally, emperors are going to forbid the association of Christians, that Christians can't assemble publicly in associations. And that's really what I think the Roman policy is about, is to try to stop those public gatherings. Rome was not that interested in trying to get people not to believe in Christianity in their heart. They're just trying to stop the public gathering and therefore kind of the public fracturing of the community.
Did the Edict of Milan in time for the church proved to be something of a two-edged sword?
Yeah, I think you can say that. I think there are negative aspects that happen. I think, there's lots of positives, which maybe are just readily observable. This is the toleration of Christianity is now going to allow the growth and development of Christian culture on a large scale, liturgy and architecture and iconography, and even the theological conversation now is going to become much more profound as we're going to go toward the councils of Nicaea and Constantinople and Chalcedon. You're going to get just a very profound development in the theological conversation. But you're certainly right. I mean, there are going to be, you know, some negatives to this. And I think maybe the biggest one is just that after this moment, theological conversation is going to also inherently be a political conversation. That the church's life is going to be joined at the hip with state politics, whether they want to or not. I mean, this is going to be the reality, and I do think this starts to have its influence, you know, and certainly still does in the church. That, you know, if you can just imagine the huge kind of radical changes is going to start to affect in the church, that for the first time after the Edict of Milan, the church is going to start having power in this world, and that's going to have huge ramifications throughout its life. And I do think one of the things is that you're going to start to, the gospel itself, you're going to start having the church thinking of the gospel in more political terms as an act of political, legal kind of power versus maybe your early centuries where the gospel is much more intimate, it's much more about a familial kind of fellowship of love that needs to endure, you know, persecution and things like that. And so it will have certainly profound effects upon the whole church's life, and not, as you say, not always the greatest effects. As many have noted, that the Edict of Milan almost gets undone as we move forward in this regard, as Christianity becomes the religion of the state. After, with Theodosius I later in the 4th century and then beyond that, there has always been a tendency of the church, therefore, to try to use political power to enforce its religion. And, those kinds of things still remain issues for us.
With only about 30 seconds here before we need to wrap up, in light of the plight of Christians in Muslim-dominated countries and elsewhere in the 21st century, would a 21st century Edict of Milan be needed today? About 30 seconds.
Well, that's a good question. And 30 seconds, it's hard to say. But I think, yeah, I mean, this is still a huge issue. I mean, in America, we take this for granted, perhaps. And maybe even, just don't think about it too much. But I do think this remains a huge issue. And I do think the Edict of Milan testifies to that maybe fundamental truth that that I think needs to be again recalled, and that is that the conviction that God wants to be worshipped by free human beings. He doesn't coerce people, and it doesn't work that way. Worship has to be done according to one's conscience and according to one's free conscience. So that, I think, is the fundamental message of the Edict of Milan and one that we could take note of again today.
Dr. James Buscher is Assistant Professor of Historical Theology and Director of Deaconess Studies at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Buscher, thank you very much for being our guest.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Don.